Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Today my guest is Dr. Baldeep Bains, and he is the younger brother of Dr. Harpal Bains, who you may have remembered we had on the show a few months ago now. Thank you for joining us, Baldeep.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, can you tell us your background and about you and all the wonderful things that you've done to date?
Okay, so I grew up in Malaysia, as my sister did, but then I was educated in the UK. I went to university in Scotland, and went to med school in Scotland. And while I was in medical school, I had this wild, mad idea that I wanted to join the military. And before I knew it, I signed on a dotted line and signed up. Probably half of my life to the military, which was an interesting start to my life. So joined the military when I was in medical school, so I was an officer cadet at university. And upon finishing university, I spent a bit of time as a junior doctor, finished that, then I did my officer's training. I joined the Navy, which is joined the Royal Navy. Upon finishing officer's training, I spent about 3 years getting deployed in various zones, some nice places, some not very nice places. As a Navy doctor, you look after Royal Marine commandos. So, you know, so apart from going to nice ports and places, you do get dragged to some other places as well. You know, war zones, conflict zones, and things like that. So that was the initial part of my life. So for the first 5 years after graduation, I spent most of my time with the military doing military operations around the world. Upon completing that, then as a military doctor, you have to decide what you're going to do. So I initially thought I was going to be a surgeon, as do every military male you find. So I started off training to be an orthopedic surgeon. I spent about 4 years doing orthopedic surgery, and I was doing my training up in Birmingham. So I enjoyed it up to a certain extent, and then I realized that I was reaching a point where I enjoyed surgery. I wasn't passionate about surgery. I think I was passionate about something a bit more, and I discovered the whole world of general practice, and which is when I decided to quit surgery and join general practice. So I did my GP training partially with the military, partially within the civilian sector, and I qualified as a GP in 2009. And after that, again, you know, as a qualified GP, I went back into the military as a GP and worked in a variety of bases and did a few deployments and, yeah, just a mixture of different things. Up to 2015. So my wife got pregnant in 2014, and when I was deployed for 6 months, and got back just in time before she gave birth. And I think after that, it just got a bit, I think reality struck me that, you know, I can't manage a military life doing away and having a family when I left the military. So I left the military in 2015. And since then, I worked as a GP for a short while before my sister suggested that I join her practice, which is where I'm currently at. So I've been with my sister, so coming close to a year and a half now, been working alongside with her, and which is pretty much where I heard about LDN, to be completely honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, being an NHS doctor and your military training as well, I should think that makes you mainstream, a mainstream doctor, where your sister is more of looking at, I hate to use the word alternative, but to use more natural and less mainstream medications and treatment plans, wouldn't you say?
I couldn't agree with you, Mo. It was quite a paradigm shift for me, because when she first spoke to me about what she was going to do, I thought she was absolutely bonkers. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a GP. I might be a military GP, but I still practice general practice as with any civilian doctors would have practiced. And we adhere to the same guidelines. We use NICE guidelines, in the UK, and we adhere to the same guidelines. And what she was talking to me about functional medicine, I was like, we had many, many arguments about, how she was practicing medicine, and, how I was like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Are you mad? Are you this? I've got to say that we didn't see eye to eye initially with regards to what she was doing. And obviously things do change. And I think fortunately she persevered, and she got me reading, got me attending some courses, got me, starting to see the way she does things and, the way the functional medicine works. And to be completely honest, more I started going into it, more I started realizing the flaws that I'm trying to criticize, general practice. I think they do a fantastic job, and I utterly appreciate what my colleagues do and everything else. But there's a certain extent to which we can actually help them, and they're quite stuck with their ways, and I don't blame them, because they're guided by guidelines, and a lot of the guidelines, who sits in the committees of guidelines are, people who've got some vested interests elsewhere, so I'm not going to mention names, but I can understand, the restrictions they have and why, they can't, it's quite hard for them to go and explore other avenues. So yeah, so to sort of cut it short, I think it was upon reading and starting to understand more and more, speaking to people, and that's when I started understanding that's another way of doing things. And I'm really, really glad that I've been introduced to this world, because had I not been introduced, I think I would have been missing out on a lot, and I would have been doing a lot of my patients, to a certain extent, some degree of injustice as a GP. So I'm actually finding it harder and harder to be a GP now, because of what I do know, and I'm finding it harder to get practice the way I used to practice, which is a bit of a conflict of interest, because I still do GP work, NHS GP, and I spend the remainder of my time doing functional medicine. So it's a bit of a clash of interest, and I think I know who's going to win. Yeah.
So, since you've been working with Harpal, what would you say, the main conditions that you are treating in the clinic?
I see the lion's share of the male patients. So predominantly a lot of the male patients that we come across do come in with, quite prominent symptoms of testosterone deficiency. That's one of the things. But increasingly I'm seeing a lot of, patients with some degree of autoimmunity as well. And, I've seen patients with pyroiditis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis. I've seen patients with chronic fatigue. I've seen patients with even Crohn's disease, and some of them with sort of functional bowel issues akin to IBS. So lion's share is male patients, with symptoms of testosterone deficiency. But increasingly, I'm seeing more patients with autoimmune sort of functional bowel type issues coming in, and chronic fatigue. That would be a sort of a fair breakdown of my patients.
Mm-hmm. So when a patient first comes in to see you, you know, how long is the initial consultation? You know, how do you do lots of testing, form filling, question answering, or all of them? What's the procedure?
Yes. Yeah, so most of the patients, we've got different degree of medicals or medicals that we offer our patients. But majority of them are between an hour to an hour, hour and a half. And most of the patients will have a questionnaire prior to coming in. So the questionnaire they're filling will hopefully give us a bit of an idea of, you know, where they are, you know, what they're looking to do, what looking to get, what are their main symptoms, what are their diet like, you know how is their condition affecting the activities of their daily living. So hopefully, you know, as intention, hopefully patients would have done that prior to seeing it. If not the end of the world, but we're going to be asking quite a lot of questions. So yeah, we spend anywhere between an hour to an hour and a half with the patient. So quite a thorough questioning. We actually go through literally going down to nitty gritty, going in a functional medicine world. You can't just ask the symptoms, you know, and just be done with it, because more I go into functional medicine, more I realize that, you know, every single bit of your body is interconnected, and, you know, the importance of, you know, what goes on with your bowel can affect what goes on in your brains and what goes on in your thyroid gland, what goes on in your muscles, you know, and everything else. So it's quite a thorough overview of what's going on with our patients. You know, we try to get as full a picture as we can, not just dealing with their presenting complaint, but looking at them as a whole person. Mm-hmm. And hopefully by actually doing that, we'll have a sort of a thorough understanding as to, you know, where the areas are. We try to look for a root cause analysis, you know, try to find what's your root cause, what's the originator of all your symptoms. You know, is there something that, you know, that we can hopefully try to deal with first before going to anything else? Because as a GP, a lot of times what we do is we do patchwork. You know, no disrespect to GPs. Again, we will see a patient, we will treat the symptoms, and you know, majority of time that's what we do. But they keep coming back with same issues again and again. And if you don't look into root cause, and it takes time to look into a root cause, you can't just expect, you know, to spend 10 minutes or 5 minutes with the patient taking history and you'll find root cause. You need to really go into a lot more detail. Mm-hmm. So, which is what we try to aspire to do, and try to just get into the nitty gritty and hopefully try to find what might be a root cause of a lot of these symptoms.
To find the root cause, what other testing do you use?
So, majority of the time we will do quite a comprehensive blood panel. So that's sort of one of the baseline things we do. So in a comprehensive blood panel, it would include the likes of a full blood count. You do quite a comprehensive biochemistry analysis, looking into things like your liver function, your thyroid function, your kidney function, vitamin D levels, your iron status, and a few other parameters. More importantly, for what we do in our practice, we do quite a in-depth hormonal evaluation, looking into quite a few different hormone levels and trying to see if there's any avenue for us to, you know, optimize, or if there's anything there that needs to be addressed. The other thing we do look for as well is things along the lines of inflammatory markers. Again, which is quite an important thing in a lot of what we do, you know, simple things like CRP. So gives us an idea of, you know, what sort of pathology is currently going on within a patient's body. That's the baseline we do. But beyond that, if a patient does have a lot of bowel-type symptoms, we will potentially do something along the lines of a comprehensive stool analysis, which is just not a simple stool microscopy and sensitivity. It's a lot more. It gives you a lot more information than just what bugs might you have. So it can give you the status of your guts and tell you, you know, what's going on within your gut lining. What are you absorbing? What you're not absorbing? What products have been broken down? What's not been broken down? So we would offer that if their bowel symptoms are quite prominent. And the other thing we might do as well is something known as SIBO testing, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, SIBO. That is to look, you know, someone complains of quite significant gut symptoms, we'll do something along those lines. And we do allergy testing as well, and we use Cyrex, which is probably, personally, I feel it's one of the best allergy testing kit out there, and I think it's extremely comprehensive, and they'll probably again give us a bit of a rough overview as to, you know, what might be a causative agent. You know, if you keep eating the same foods, and which is stimulating an inflammatory response, you know, something as simple as just re-educating from a food perspective with what you do to take. So I think that's the first few stages that we first few tests that we normally offer, you know, when we first see a patient.
And when you ask patients about diet, are they honest mm-hmm. with you as to what they eat or drink, or do they tell you what they think you would like to hear?
That's a tricky one. It again depends. I think I like to hope my patients are telling me, being quite honest with me. I think the majority of the patients we do have are quite honest, because by the time they come to see us, they're quite desperate. They've tried everything, and I think they like to be as open and honest as they can with me. So I would like to think that my patients are being honest with me. I can't verify that for sure, but I think they are, because of, you know, of how they're feeling and their determination to get better. So I think they will lay it all out there mm-hmm. to us.
I was only asking because my mother lived with us for a few years. Unfortunately, she got cancer and died. But before mm-hmm. that, we would go and see the doctor, and the doctor would say, "So, have you taken salt out of your diet?" So I used to hide the salt, because she was of the age where they used to use a lot of salt. Oh, yes, mm. I only use it occasionally. Well, and I'd sit there and I'd say to her, because I used to nag like anything, and I said, "Well, you put so much salt on it, Mum, it looks like white snow, doesn't it?" "Well, I do like my salt, you know." "Yeah. And butter, have you cut down on the butter?" "Oh, yes, I don't use as much butter." "Mum, you use as much butter, it looks like cheese, because you have it so thick." You know, but she didn't want to upset them, so she wanted to please the doctor by letting them think she had done what she was told, but she didn't used to tell the truth. So I now have to hope that when I get older, my daughter doesn't come with me. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we just continue treating symptoms and not the root cause, you know, that root cause could be creating a lot of damage. And it's really vital to find out what that is. So that is what's so good with functional medicine and integrative medicine.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree with you. I think we actually have the luxury of time, which is what me as a GP don't have. You know, I've got 10 minutes per patient, and in that 10 minutes, I've got to call a patient in, I've got to get a history from them, I've got to examine them, I've got to prescribe them, I've got to write my notes, I've got to get ready for my next patient, and, you know, you achieve. I feel sorry for them, but in 10 minutes, it's very little you can achieve, you know, especially with complex patients, you know, and complex patients are increasing in numbers, you know. Year on year, I can see, I'm seeing more and more patients with more and more complex problems coming in. So I don't think, you know, treating symptoms is the answer for that. But, you know, I've got my hands tied.
Yes. So, okay, you're seeing more and more people who have chronic conditions. So would you say, what is the difference between now and, say, 40 years ago? I mean, is it because we're eating different, that the food is treated different? I mean, when I was a child, everything was cooked from scratch. There were no additives. I mean, some of these additives, I hardly know how to pronounce them, let alone know what they are. I mean, what do you think is the the cause?
I have no doubt it's the lifestyle, it's the food, you know, it's, you know, reverse back 40, 50 years ago, how we used to eat. We're not seeing the, you know, problems that we had those days, you know, compared to the amount of bowel issues we have nowadays is just phenomenal. And I've got no doubt it's to do with our diet, you know, how our diets have changed. We've gotten a lot lazier, unfortunately. You know, it's all about the fast food culture, anything you can get, you know, get your hands on, processed food, anything that's, you know, microwaveable, fast food, nothing else. We've got, you know, no one has time to do things, you know, you want everything in an instant. So, you know, the busy lifestyle, the stress, you know, life is a lot more stressful now. I don't know. I think life's a lot more stressful now than it used to be because we've got a lot more demands. You've got everything. You've got social media, you've got emails, you've got, you know, everything at the tip of your fingers. You've got to deal with a lot more things now. So I think definitely, you know, poor diet, I think lifestyle, I think stress has got us, you know, has got a much more significant influence, you know, and the fact that we're actually doing less as well, you know, we're not exercising anywhere near as much as previously. Everyone is, you know, stuck indoors doing things, spend a huge amount of time in front of a computer screen, in front of TVs, anything else, instead of going out, playing, getting some sunlight, you know, being exposed to the sun, I think is so important, and we're not even doing that. We're just going outside and doing things outside, we're not even doing that. So simple things like that, I think has had a significant impact on modern day life.
So, yeah,
because I can say my childhood is very, very different to the childhood my kids are experiencing now. It's,
yeah, definitely. I mean, you were talking before we started, and I'm sure you're quite an outdoorsy person. But what is your diet like? I mean, are you gluten free, dairy free? Are you a vegan? What is your diet?
I am. No, I'm not. I'm neither of any of the others. I'm quite careful with what I eat. I try to eat, you know, home cooked food as much as I can. You know, so try to have food at home. I limit the amount of processed food I have. I limit the amount of processed food my kids have. You know, significantly reduce the amount of sugar I have in anything. So I still have a bit just for taste and just to give you some purpose for living. You know. Half a spoon in my tea or half a spoon in my coffee or whatever, but literally, that's as much as I take. I hardly snack. I don't have any fizzy drinks. I drink water or milk. That's it, water or milk. So I'm quite fortunate in the sense I don't really have much intolerances. So I can actually cope with, you know, gluten. I've got no relationship with gluten. But again, if I'm going to define myself, the easy way to say is I significantly reduce the amount of processed or refined carbs I have now. And if I do have carbs, it's traditionally it'll be half a plate or three quarters of a plate. It'll be probably a quarter of my plate of carbs, but I still have some carbs. I do a lot of exercise and I need the energy. So I still have carbs. And I'll have probably half my plate is protein. And then the remainder, I'll have some greens and veg. So that's probably about where I am. I'm aware of loads of different dietary regimes out there, and I just find that seem to work well for me. I'm currently 43 years old. I feel fantastic. I feel, you know, peak performance. I train hard and I can still sustain my training. I've got no real issues. I've got no fatigue issues. So I'm not obese. I'm pretty, you know, I like to say that I'm in quite a decent shape. So I think it's working for me, but I think I do attribute a lot of it to me being quite religious about exercising on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But I'm careful. I'm not, you know, I don't jump all the time. I'm not munching on crisps every day, bars, and I don't eat junk. Mm-hmm. And in fact, quite recently I started something known as intermittent fasting. I've read a lot about intermittent fasting, and I'm probably doing it about 2-3 times a week. I try to fast a total of 16 hours, and then try to eat within the daylight hours, which is what it's been shown to be quite effective. And so that's the only, I suppose, if you say any dietary routine, but that's been quite recent, probably 2-3 weeks ago. That's what I started doing. I heard a podcast, basically, and that's where I got the idea of trying intermittent fasting. I just read a lot of good things about it, and decided I might just give it a try and see how it helped, if it makes a difference. I don't find it too hard to do. So, yeah.
So we nearly ran out of time, but just very briefly, parents who want to make sure that their children grow up as healthily as possible, what would you recommend to do diet-wise with children? Because it's very difficult, isn't it? You know, with all the crisps and the sweets and the biscuits and all the advertising on television. How do you go about trying to establish healthy habits?
I think you've got to, right from them being a baby, you've got to introduce them to good fruits, introducing fruits to healthy fruits, healthy vegetables. So our kids, right from 1 year old, 2 years old, they've been eating loads of fruit with potentially fresh vegetables as well. And we try to make everything from scratch, make home cooked food. So we have very, very little snacks at home. Our kids, snacks is a luxury. They get sweets. We have hardly any sweets. But if they do get any sweets, it's a luxury. We don't give them any. They have no sweetened drinks. They have no, we don't buy Robinsons or anything along those lines. Nothing whatsoever. They drink water. They like water. That's the only thing they seem to drink. My daughter doesn't like to drink anything else apart from water, which is quite nice. Once in a while, she gets fresh fruit juice. But apart from that, it's water and milk, and that's all they have. Water and milk, and so I think trying to develop habits right from the start, and we're trying to give them a lot more, for breakfast having eggs. We've never purchased any, things like cornflakes, frosties, nothing of those sort. If we have to give them anything, I'll give them oats, or we'll give them Weetabix, something along those lines if we have to. I've got some issues with Weetabix myself, but I'll rather than have something along those lines that we have some high sugary cereals. I think eggs and even traditional English breakfast as well. They love sausages. We try to get good quality sausages for kids. So I think just being slightly pickier. Trying to make a lot more home cooked meals and try to buy less and less processed food. I know it's a lot easier when you have kids. Easier said than done. Life's extremely busy. Everyone is quite time poor. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take a lot, It doesn't take a lot to make a decent meal for a kid. If you've seen Jamie Oliver, in fact, we got quite a decent recipe from Jamie Oliver. kids' recipes, and they're healthy and they're easy to make, and they don't cost an arm and a leg. So, yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. So we know what we need to be doing, and we should practice it. So we've come to the end very quickly. If patients would like to come and see you, how do they get in touch with you?
So they can just go on to our website known as Harpal Clinic. So the website is called harpalclinic.co.uk, spelling H-A-R-P-A-L, clinic.co.uk. And we have two practitioners there. It's myself and my sister. So we both work alongside each other, so hopefully they'll get two for one, because she discusses a lot of patients with me, I discuss a lot of patients with her, so you get the benefits of two practitioners. And hopefully when you come and see me, you'll have I can appreciate the frustrations of a lot of patients as well, having come from the other side, and I can understand what's going on, and I can understand the limitations that they're faced with their GPs, and be able to give them a bit more of a balanced view. And I think one thing we pride ourselves on is ongoing support. So most of my patients have a open email chain with me. So they can email me anytime, and I will get back to them. and I will advise them, if need to be. So I think a lot of patients find that somewhat quite reassuring. But, at the end of the day, they are doing things which are not very conventional. They're doing things that potentially their own GPs will be asking them, why are you doing such a thing? Good example is I prescribed LDN to one of my patients, and I had a bit of a nasty email from his GP asking me what am I doing and everything else. But again, I think once the people are educated, once the GPs are educated as to what I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing, you can get a GP alongside with you, and the GPs can work together with the patient and together with us. Ultimately, the GPs and us, what we're doing, what we're looking for is to make the patient feel better. Mm-hmm. That's our ultimate aim.
Well, that's fantastic. We'll have to have you back another day, and thank you very much, Baldeep, for being our guest today.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me as well.
This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, Linda, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.